We've all heard it before. It's who you know. Now hear why it's so true. Welcome to Social Capital, the weekly podcast where we dive into social relationships and how the investment you put into them establishes trust, reciprocity, and value within your networking community. Your host, Lori Hybe, will connect with top professionals and dive into their best networking stories and techniques to share with you.
Hey, everybody, Lori Hybe here. Welcome to the Social Capital Podcast. Our show notes are found at socialcapitalpodcast.com. You can also follow me on Twitter at LJ Hybe and on Facebook. This week's guest is Amy Franco. As a sales leader, Amy built a successful B2B sales career with global technology companies IBM and Lenovo. She pivoted into entrepreneurship in 2007, launching a training firm, Impact Instruction Group. Known for her energetic style and practical experience, Amy is a keynote speaker and author specializing in B2B sales and leadership. Her firm's sales training and leadership programs blend current research and real-world application. Her book, The Modern Seller, is an Amazon bestseller. Amy, welcome to the show.
Hey, Lori. Thanks so much. It's great to be here.
Well, I am excited for this conversation because B2B sales is definitely a topic I enjoy talking about.
Well, good. You and I share that in common. I'm excited.
Well, let's just dive into some questions right away. What are some of the big trends influencing prospects and clients today?
Oh, gosh. You know, I talk about this quite a bit in my keynotes. And so a couple that I'll hit on that I see pretty repeatedly, you know, regardless of the product or service that you're selling or even the industries maybe that you're calling into. One is what I kind of call the world of sameness. We have so many decisions that we're making on any given day. And we have so much choice now that we really didn't have even, you know, let's call it 5 years ago. And because we have so much choice and there's so much innovation out there, lots of products and services start to look the same. And the way that they're positioned is very much the same. So similar features and benefits, even similar pricing models. So think about maybe something that you've bought, you know, whether it's on Amazon or, you know, a B2B service or product. There's just a lot of sameness out there. And what that means for us, whether we're talking with a current client or we're talking with a prospect, we have to get really good at figuring out how to be meaningful to them and how to be memorable with them so that we can kind of rise above the noise. If we don't do that, then it's really easy for us to just seem like everyone else in the eyes of a prospect or client. So that's a big one. And then the second one I would say is the changing of expectations when it comes to things like return on investment, speed to results. Our prospects and clients have gotten a lot more sophisticated with their expectations and with the time that we need to deliver on expectations. I think we're not working in annual businesses anymore. We're really working in quarterly businesses. And so it makes a lot of sense for us as sellers to really be laser focused on knowing what their specific ROI is so that we can start to make progress on it in as quickly as a quarter. So those are probably two of the big ones that I see most often.
Wow. I think the world of sameness, there's so much truth to that. I was just thinking even from the consumer standpoint, yeah, I mean, you go to Amazon and you have how many options of the exact same thing, right?
Oh, totally. Totally. Yeah. I was looking for a CRM. This was maybe a year ago. Uh-huh. And I'd done a fair amount of due diligence and I probably narrowed it down to maybe four. And what struck me as I was researching even to those four, almost all of them can be interchangeable with their features and benefits and their subscription-based pricing models. Mm-hmm. And because they all looked the same, I did what any really smart decision maker does. I punted the decision down the road about 6 months.
You're right. Yep.
because I just couldn't decide. They all looked the same. Mm-hmm. And that's what our prospects and even our clients, they're doing to us.
Yeah. Well, and I'm intrigued by your second comment about the changing of expectations and working in quarterly businesses. And can you just peel the onion on that a little bit? I'm just kind of curious and elaborate on what you mean by that, I guess.
Yeah, for sure. So the best way that I can elaborate on it is to give you an example from my own life of where I screwed this up with a prospect. Okay. So I was sitting in a meeting with a chief sales officer and a regional bank president. So I'm sitting in this meeting with them, and we had had a number of meetings leading up to this story. And we were looking at what were we trying to solve for, what were some various sales training solutions, because that's what I sell. And so we've gotten to this like third or fourth meeting. And here's me coming in thinking, all right, we're going to dot some T's, we're going to cross some I's, but, you know, we're all on the same page. We're going to walk out of there. And I felt really confident I was walking out of there with a contract, right? Mm-hmm. So we're partway through this meeting, and I have a good relationship with these folks. And so we could be really candid with one another. And my regional president, she gets that kind of thoughtful look on her face, like I'm about to be asked a tough question. And so what she said to me, she's like, Amy, she's like, I've got to be able to go to my president, the president of the entire bank. I need to be able to bullet point out for him two or three bullet points exactly how the solution is going to move our business forward in the next 90 days. Boom.
Wow.
And I should have been prepared for that question, and I wasn't, because I didn't know enough about what their exact goals were going to be in the next 90 days, you know, maybe in the next two quarters. I wasn't laser focused enough on what those expectations were from their perspective so that I could make sure I was addressing all of those concerns instead of now having to go back and reconfigure how I was going to solve for these specific things. Really time bound. And I would argue more sophisticated, because once we got into further conversations around that, what I uncovered in terms of what they expected was different than what I would have maybe just made some running assumptions on.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's really interesting. And when you share that, it reminds me of a similar experience that I had recently, because I've always looked at it as kind of an annual plan, right? And I think that's very B2B, but before we even launched the annual plan, I did have one of the sales guys come to me, and he's like, what can we do in the next 3 months?
Yep. So I know.
I'm like, oh yeah, this is happening. Okay. Really interesting observation that you've made.
It's kind of a balancing act between being able to look far that year, or, you know, maybe even 3 years to have that vision, but then being able to back it down to something where your decision maker can go to his or her higher ups, depending on what your selling scenario is, and just being able to very concisely say, here's how we're going to move the needle, whether it's a year from now or it's a quarter from now. Mm-hmm. And typically, and especially in a publicly traded organization, they're looking for quarterly.
Wow. That's really good insight. Well, let's talk about your book a little bit, The Modern Seller. So I know that it lays out five dimensions that modern sellers need to cultivate. And that first one is agile. How does that come into play in modern selling?
Yeah. So there are five dimensions in the book, and just a tiny bit of context. What I see are some changes or an evolution, if you will, in what some of those big picture skills are that sales organizations need to build. And that's kind of the foundation of the book. Skills behind the skills that can help us be better at things like prospecting, presenting, closing, our everyday skills. And agility is one of those. And one of the interesting research points on agility, Center for Creative Leadership does quite a bit of work on what they see as next generation skills, leadership skills being one of them. But this idea of agility wasn't even on the radar 20 years ago or even 10 years ago. It's really just in recent times that they are seeing agility rising to the top in terms of the skill sets that organizations need to build. And specifically, I believe in sales organizations. I define agility. Harvard Business Review has a fantastic definition for agility: is this continuous learning from experience and being able to cultivate our experiences and pull the lessons from those and then apply them to our next situation. And I can't think of a profession where that's more relevant than sales. Mm-hmm. Being able to constantly learn from our experiences, pull the lessons, and then being able to really quickly apply them to our next selling situation.
No, that sounds great. That definitely makes sense. And I guess I haven't considered that in the sales perspective, and I'm imagining most of our listeners haven't either. So really good insight, and definitely wants to make me dive into this book a little bit further now.
if you have ever felt like you have been thrown into the deep end of the pool and you've had to just figure stuff out, that's agility. So yep. If I think about, you know, if you're maybe you got a new territory, or you have to build and go to market with a whole new product set or service set, like you're really kind of building something from scratch and you're trying to figure out, where do I even start? And you're feeling like you're in that deep end of the pool, your agility is what's going to serve you there.
Yeah, definitely. Cool. So how can modern sellers cultivate mutually valuable and strategic relationships?
So this being a social capital podcast is that's such a timely relevant question for our conversation here. Mm-hmm. One of the dimensions of modern selling is what I call social. And not social in the sense of social selling. While that is important, and I believe it is a skill to cultivate, I think about social in the realm of social capital. Social capital, and from my view, being the mutual value that we create with our networks, mm-hmm. by the contributions that we make to our networks, by the contributions that we make to specific individuals within our networks. And sellers and sales organizations that really get it, they are intentional about the sales goals that they set, and then the relationships that they build in order to reach those sales goals. We have, we can be building relationships with an infinite number of people. I look like at my LinkedIn connections. I have thousands of connections on LinkedIn, but I certainly don't have thousands of relationships on LinkedIn.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so being able to really get crystal clear on what your sales goals are, your top one or two goals, and then being able to make decisions about the relationships that you need to build and add value to in order to help you reach those goals.
Yeah, that's definitely important. I mean, that's what it's all about, right?
Absolutely.
It's extremely important to be intentional about those goals. Like, as you said, I think that's just, it's too easy nowadays to just connect with anyone without any plan in place.
Oh, right. And it's, we have so many choices about who we could be building relationships with, and it can be almost, overwhelming. So when we're really clear on where we need to be building the relationships, that's to me, the first step in building a relationship that's strategic, that both people are, getting and giving value to. So for me, a strategic relationship is one that's balanced, where I'm really giving to that person and helping them achieve their goals. And then they have the opportunity also to return that.
Absolutely. And that's what the focus of this podcast is on, right?
For sure. Right.
So as we talk about building relationships, I mean, the word networking is typically the word that it evokes fear with some people and hesitation and uncertainty. So, the reason I like to ask this question is I'm hoping to remove that fear associated with networking and share the successes that come from it. So can you share with our listeners your most successful or favorite networking story or experience that you've encountered?
Yeah. So one comes to mind that is pretty recent, and I hope it's a good example of taking a social, online social connection, building a relationship, and then turning that into an opportunity. So I'm thinking of probably one of the biggest deals that I ever closed in my company's history. It was well over $500,000. And that that opportunity came from a relationship that started on LinkedIn. Nice. I had been doing some research on decision makers in my niche, which is learning and development leaders. So think about like a director or maybe a vice president of learning and development, someone who's responsible for those initiatives in their organization. And so I've been doing some LinkedIn research, and I came across a person who was had this title or was this type of decision maker. And I reached out on LinkedIn, I introduced myself, and that was like just the very beginning of the relationship. And this person is kind of a relationship-oriented person too, and so that helps. And you don't always know that coming out of the gate when you're building those relationships on LinkedIn. But the way that I approached it was to provide articles, resources. I invited this person to a forum that I had created for decision makers specifically in this space. And so the start of that relationship was me making sure that I was investing in the relationship first and providing ideas, connections that I hoped would be valuable to this person. And they were, to the point where we were able to take that relationship out of LinkedIn and into a live in-person relationship. So that was the next step, moving it from that social sphere into the live sphere. And then this person had switched jobs in all of this. And this person had finally landed at an organization where there was an opportunity for us to do business together. And it was an RFP process that I was a part of, large organization, large enterprise. And the whole entire relationship started in LinkedIn, evolved into something that was live and in person, and then ultimately led to that opportunity. And because we had built up a lot of mutual trust, I was able to ask for access to other people in the organization to help me position myself well to win this business. And I don't think I would have had that opportunity had I not taken the time over the year or two prior to that to just continually try to be valuable to this other person.
Yeah. I think that there's a couple of valuable lessons in there. One, I love that it originated on LinkedIn, because I know a lot of individuals question that as a resource for building relationships and business. And two, the emphasis on how much time it took for you to build and nurture that relationship, but ultimately you had a very positive outcome at the end of the day.
Yeah. And to that second point, I really had no idea where that relationship was ultimately going to lead. And so sometimes we kind of step out and build those relationships without an expectation of a return. And because what I sell has typically longer sell cycles or more complex sell cycles, I knew going into it that it was likely going to be 6 months or a year or longer before an opportunity presented itself. And so this is where being persistent, being patient, that isn't the only relationship that I've cultivated online. I have a number of those relationships. You just don't know where it's going to lead.
Yeah, exactly. And at the end of the day, you were intentional with your actions and identified who it was that you were trying to build relationships with. I think that's really important too.
Yeah. And there have been times where that strategy, where maybe I'm building a relationship with somebody, but maybe they aren't the ultimate decision maker. If I'm doing enough to be valuable to that person, I can typically be introduced to a decision maker or be introduced to someone else in the organization that they're at in order to, you know, further my business development. So even though that person may not be the ultimate person, you add enough value to him or her, they will look to help you by maybe making some other connections or intros for you.
Yeah, absolutely. So how do you stay in front of or best nurture your network?
Yeah. So the ways that I have really, that have helped me to stay in front of and nurture my network is I had to get better at defining who my network and who my community is. And if anybody out there kind of feels like you're boiling the ocean and determining who your community is or who your networks are, I can still relate to this because as an entrepreneur, I have the ability to build a relationship with in any industry and or with various types of decision makers. So I really had to get clear on the communities that I wanted to be connected into first. So I am calling on professional services. I am calling on insurance. Those are probably my big industries that I call into. So I have found kind of my communities within those industries. And I stay in front of them by joining relevant associations that they might be a part of. That strategy right there has given me a ton of scale and lift that I wouldn't be able to get otherwise if I was trying to do things one-on-one. So relevant associations has been a huge way for me to stay in front of and connect with my community. The other way that I've connected with my community is to find the groups that I also get personal energy from. So there are two that come to mind. I'm part of the National Speakers Association because I'm a keynoter. So I get to spend time with other like-minded people. So that's a community for me. And then there are a couple of sales groups that I belong to, Sales Experts Channel and Women Sales Pros, which are, you know, other communities of people where we are like-minded, but also diverse. And we can help one another out. So there's the client-facing community that I can stay connected to through associations. And then there is my professional development center of influence community internally that I stay connected to.
Yeah, that's great. I think it's extremely important to get involved in those communities and continue to have that face time.
Yep,
so what advice would you offer the business professional who's looking to grow their network?
So for the business professional that's looking to grow his or her network, where I would start is I would start, especially if you're a seller, I would start with your sales goals, because your sales goals will help you to determine where you might start to build relationships. But more generally speaking, for the general business professional, I would start in your backyard, start in your community. So I'm thinking about where I live in Columbus, Ohio. I look at broader events that I can get plugged into, whether they are part of my particular area of expertise or not. So I get plugged into things like the Columbus Chamber. I get plugged into an organization that does broad programming and just brings diversity of ideas. So if you're looking for somewhere to get plugged in, start in your own community and start in your own backyard and look for events and organizations that have kind of broad appeal that can help get you out of maybe what your silo might be and building relationships more broadly in the community.
Excellent pieces of advice there. And I agree that a chamber, identifying your local chamber is a really great place to at least get started and kind of get comfortable with it until you decide to really focus in on where you want to go. Really good advice.
There's a book from author Judy Robinette, and it's called How to Be a Power Connector. And she had this phrase that I absolutely love, and I want to give her credit for this. But what she says is that sometimes you got to get into a new room. And why I love that phrase is, you know, like so many people, I'm kind of a creature of habit. When I find my organizations and I find my people that I want to hang out with, it's really easy for me to stay in those spaces. But for us to challenge ourselves to get new ideas and to build more diverse networks, I like Judy's advice of sometimes getting into a new room. And so a very quick example of that was I went to a conference a couple months ago that was a conference. It was local here, but it was all about like venture capital and mergers and acquisitions, which is not the world that I play in every day. And I had to force myself out of my box. And I said, I'm going to go to this conference. I'm going to learn something new and I'm going to see who's in the room here that maybe I could extend my networks with?
Yeah, fantastic. I think that's great to definitely push yourself outside of your comfort zone a little bit. So you spoke a little bit about your successes with LinkedIn, but my question here is digital networking or traditional networking? Which one do you find more value in?
Oh, so I really prefer traditional in-person or face-to-face type of networking relationship building. I always look for a way to take a digital connection that I want to continue, and I look for a way to bring it offline. So I guess I'm a little old school in that I like to sit down over a cup of coffee when I can, or over a video chat if that works. But I really like that face-to-face old school interaction, if you will.
Yep. No, I think that's great. I am definitely an advocate of basically what you said, taking that digital connection and having that face-to-face conversation. I think it's a very powerful because there's so many different levels of connecting beyond technology.
Oh, yeah. And I'm a huge fan of technology for broader reach and for maybe getting connected to people that I might not get connected to otherwise. But when somebody I trust says, you know, like if you came to me and said, you know, hey, Amy, I really think that you need to meet so-and-so, I'm going to do an introduction between the two of you. That carries so much weight with me because you're someone that I trust. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to follow through on that connection. And I'm going to look for a way to either have a phone call, a video chat, or if I have the opportunity to meet you in person, I'm going to make the effort to do it, especially because you recommended that introduction to me.
Absolutely. Amy, if you could go back to your 20-year-old self, what would you tell yourself to do more of, less of, or differently with regards to your professional career?
Oh, you know, if I were to go back to my 20-year-old self, you know, which was just like last week, by the way. but if I were to go back to my 20-year-old self, what I would tell her is to take in as many leadership experiences as you can and be willing to say yes to opportunities that just feel like they're uncomfortable, that they're not the sure bet. I think that's what I'd tell myself. And also just to know that, you know, everything's going to work out. You will meet the right people. You will create the right opportunities or the best opportunities, but just to be willing to be uncomfortable is probably what I'd say.
Oh, I think that's very, very sound advice. The leadership experience is, regardless of your level of comfort, is going to make you stronger no matter what. Just having that opportunity, you're going to learn and grow from it. That's fantastic.
For sure. Yep.
So we've all heard of the 6 degrees of separation. Now, who would be the one person that you'd love to connect with, and do you think you could do it within the sixth degree?
You know what? One person that I would probably really love to connect with, I don't know if this is going to feel like really cliche or not, but I absolutely love, I love Oprah Winfrey, and I love what she has created. And I love the fact that she's a relationship person. Mm-hmm. If there's somebody who embodies social capital, it's probably her. And people that really trust and follow her and her desire to be impactful in the world. So if I kind of think about that for a moment and 6 degrees of separation, I would say yes. With enough hustle and figuring out what those different degrees of separation are, I think I could reach her. Now, mm-hmm. whether or not we actually make a connection is something else, but I do think with enough hustle, enough research in leveraging some digital connectivity that yes, there's 6 degrees or fewer, 6 degrees or fewer degrees of separation between us.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, I think that there's, she is a relationship queen, basically. She definitely gets people advocates for a ton of individuals, and a lot of people trust her because of her giving and her willingness to share value and expertise. I think it's fantastic. And I'm thinking I should try to get her on my show.
There you go. Oh my gosh. How awesome would that be?
Oh, that would be so awesome. I'll just tag her on Twitter and see what happens.
You know what? Stranger things have happened. You never know. That is one cool thing about the digital element of social capital is the way that it is kind of, it's kind of collapsed the degrees, if you will. Mm-hmm. It's kind of collapsed the degrees. It's leveled the connectivity playing field in a way.
Absolutely.
That I think just wouldn't exist without it.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's definitely evolved in a positive way, how quickly you can get in front of someone. I mean, it's fun to see A-listers, celebrities, I guess, or just high profile individuals commenting on your quotes, your normal people.
<You
know? laughs>
Right.
No, I'm putting air quotes as I'm saying this, but no one could see me, so I don't know why I'm doing that. Normal people. I don't know. It's definitely changed that realm a little bit and kind of flattened the hierarchy of who you can communicate with and when and how.
Yeah, and if I think about, you know, all the big things that I want to accomplish, or maybe that I have accomplished, that feel scary, but they're really impactful, that requires being able to connect with, you know, higher level people that have influence. And it takes I've learned, kind of back to that, what would I tell my 20-year-old self, is that sometimes you have to be willing to sort of do skip levels, if you will, and go straight to where you see the influence and be willing to ask for what you need.
Mm-hmm. Nice. So any final word or advice to offer our listeners with regards to growing and supporting your network?
Yeah, so I think maybe one or two parting thoughts is if building your network feels like something that is really difficult to do, or you feel like a lot of apprehension about it, where I have always felt like that apprehension is where I feel like I am asking for something but not providing any kind of value in return. So I think the lesson that I learned is always to be as generous as I can and in providing value to the people around me. So that's probably one thing. And then secondly, I don't think it matters where you are in your career. Or like you're young in your career, you're more experienced in your career. We all have something of value to add to the people around us. So to not allow maybe some of the labels that we put on ourselves around our age or our level of experience, or I'm not enough of this, or I'm too much of that, to try to set all that aside and instead focus on what could I bring to this person in terms of an idea, a resource, a connection. I find when I look at it from that lens that it takes away a lot of the fear. And it allows me to connect with people in a better way. And it also allows me to connect with people that I may not have the courage to connect with otherwise. So those are probably a few ideas, parting ideas for somebody to help them build their networks.
Yeah, I think what it comes down to, like you said, is having some sort of value to provide. And if you have this apprehension, as you said, it's likely because you're not sure of what to give, but you really shouldn't second guess yourself because you do have something to give, and everyone has something to give.
Absolutely.
Good. So Amy, if anyone was interested in getting in contact with you, what is the best way that they can reach you?
Yeah. So the best way that you can reach me, learn more about me, is amyfranco.com. And then the two social channels that I spend the most time on are LinkedIn and Twitter, and it's Amy Franco in both.
Nice. And we will include all that information in our show notes. Thank you so much for being on the show today, Amy.
Lori, thank you. I really appreciate it.
This was a lot of fun and a great conversation. This wraps up our episode of Social Capital. A huge thank you to Amy Franco for taking the time to connect with us. Join us next week for another great guest as we continue the conversation on networking and building your community. If you need me, send an email to Lori@socialcapitalpodcast.com. Otherwise, we will see you next week.
That's all for this episode of the Social Capital Podcast. Be sure to visit socialcapitalpodcast.com for show notes, more episodes, and to check out our free ebooks on business and networking.